Blog Talk Radio.
I want to present to some and introduce to others your host for Anything But Ordinary Radio, Mr. Michael McCleary.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Anything But Ordinary Radio. I'm your host, Michael McCleary, and I am so excited to have you with us for our second primetime show. We had a great show last week. We have a great show coming up tonight, and I'm flying solo tonight. Normally, I have a co-host for all of you that know, but right now, Maria is pleasantly sleeping on the island of Crete in Greece, so that's really exciting for her. And Jed, I see, is hanging out in the chat room tonight, but also just checking in to see what we're doing, checking in on the show. Really tonight, I just wanted to make this a fun kind of intimate session with two friends, because I have two really great guests tonight, two really great friends. Nick Wilzinski is going to be with us tonight, as well as Lindsay Wilson, two wonderful people, two great, extraordinary performers. And that's what's going to be a little fun about tonight, is you have two people who are living their passion, living their dreams, and they're both performers. Nick is a musician. He plays all over the world with large headlining acts like Neo, and also plays in the Metro Detroit area as a solo act and with some local bands. So Nick is living the dream, living his passion, playing all the time. And so is Lindsay. Lindsay, though not a musician, she is an author and a professional dancer. She actually is a professional dancer at Walt Disney World Resorts in Orlando, Florida. She's performed all over the world. She's performed in Dubai and Japan, on cruise lines, and really in ballet companies all over the place. And Lindsay is also a author. And so very excited to have her on our second half of our hour. So first half is going to be Nick. Second half is going to be Lindsay. And we're really excited to have them both on tonight. And right now, Nick isn't with us. He hasn't called in. So you know what I'm going to do? We're going to have a little fun. And I'm going to introduce to you another friend of mine who is on the line, and he's going to join us for a couple minutes, and that is Mr. Jed Ray. Jed, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm great.
Wow,
Jed's
that's
awesome.
Pretty cool. I mean, you know, this is technology working, eh?
Hey, exactly. Jed is Jed is affectionately known as the backup plan. He's Plan B. You know, when you're not sure if someone's going to call in, he was kind enough to show up tonight. So I'm so excited to have Jed with us tonight. So, Jed, tell me a little bit about, you know, you're pursuing your passions right now. I know you've, you know, we talked about this last week. We had two really great guests on last week.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it?
It was, and Jed kind of talked a little bit about this last week, was, you know, pursuing your passion, pursuing your purpose. So, you know, what's been going on with you? I know what's exciting is he's got a show he's creating. He has some different seminars he's doing, and really just going after it. So what's up, Jed? Tell our audience a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is when you come to a point in your life when success or no success, that's not really the key, but you just feel unsatisfied, that you know you're not complete, you know that you're not fulfilled, you know that there's something more out there that either is waiting for you to create or waiting for you to be a part of or whatever. I got to that point. And so it was time to step up to the plate and, you know, really put my walk and my mouth together and start doing what it was that I was really, really passionate about. So we got a TV / high-tech radio / video streaming program that's in testing right now. We've still got 2 more weeks of testing with a live TV studio here in Eugene, broadcasting to one of the radio shows. We haven't completed we're not sure yet whether we're going to, you know, move into the motivational radio connection, whether it's going to be talk show or whether it's blog talk, whatever venue best suits this technology that we're putting together, because we also have a Ustream video feed simultaneously. So it's an interesting experiment, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it. It's called the success curve.
It's called the success curve. I want everybody to check it out. Jed, really quick, because we do have Nick is
Did he
on
make
the
it?
Line.
So all right,
like,
yeah, he made it.
Yeah.
He's around.
We're going to bring him on in just a minute, but I want people to, because, you know, you're really putting together this program, and also for anybody who doesn't know me or knows me well, you know, Jed is one of my best friends, and Jed has a really great soul, and he's doing a lot of wonderful things. So if you wouldn't mind, Jed, share a little bit, just really quickly, where people can find you, and they can find out more updates about what you're doing creating this new show.
There's a couple places. One is, of course, on my blog, Jed, JedReay.com, JedReay.com. That's one place. The other place is either on Facebook, Jed Reay, JedReay, or currently, the Success Curve is currently being aired on Blog Talk Radio, and it's all one word, The Success Curve. And then on Ustream, same thing. You can see, you can come watch our testings, because we are recording the testings. I gotta say, they're a lot of fun. So
yeah,
Ustream
they're,
or
they're a lot of fun, and they're pretty humorous.
Yeah, definitely. Well, take off with your show, bud.
Well, you know, thanks, Jed. This is one of the fun things about modern technology. We get people who get to just come in, stop by, and join us. And Jed, thanks for joining us, and we will be talking with you soon, of course.
My pleasure.
All right, thanks, Jed. You were just listening to Jed Reay, the creator of the Success Curve. Check him out, www.jedreay.com. Some great things to learn there, but also a really great guy to get to know. And without further ado, I really want to bring our first guest on. Like I had mentioned before in the pre-show, Nick Wolzinski. Nick is a musician, plays an amazing sax. Let me tell you, the guy is awesome. And what's really exciting about what he does is he's living his passion. He goes out there, he lives on playing his musical instrument, and like I said, plays headlining acts with like Neo, other people, and also local shows. You can check Nick out all over the place. And I'm so excited to have Nick on with us. Nick, how are you doing tonight?
I am terrific, and I'm glad that this timing worked out as well as it did. This is perfect. I was trying to get some baseball tickets for my dad real quick, and it was coming in on 10 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, no, I know he's going to call me as he's getting to my place. I'm like, don't call me. I got to do this radio show. So I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, Nick, yes. Tell me a little bit about playing an instrument. When did you start playing? When did it click for you? How long have you been playing?
The thing of it is I only started the same as a lot of kids in the fifth or sixth grade is when a lot of kids start. And it was really by chance that I picked sax. It was like not anything that I knew I was going to want to do. It just kind of happened. And I remember going in that day when we were supposed to pick our instrument. And, you know, saxophone being what it is, you get like 3 kids want to play flute, 4 kids want to play trumpet, a bunch of kids want to play the drums, and like 26 kids are in line to play saxophone. And the band director said, well, no, we can't do this, you know, that's not going to work. And they had to talk everyone out of it to get people on clarinet and things like that. And I was like, well, no, because my parents said that they thought I should try this, and I didn't want to come home with the clarinet. And so I did that. And so anyway, I was like, I don't know, what would that be, 12 years old or so. So that's just like the same as a lot of kids. I didn't start early. You know, I know a lot of people who started playing piano or whatever when they were 3 years old, and I didn't do that. It wasn't something that just immediately jumped out to me. I always liked music. I was always really passionate about music. I listened, like, I was obsessed with listening to my dad's records and stuff when I was growing up. I did that all the time and watched the Motown 25 special every day and all this, but I didn't know that I would play something. That just sort of happened. And then it clicked as far as something that I really cared about when I was in high school. But then even then, it was like I didn't practice a lot. I kind of practiced when I had to. But then when I got into college for music education, actually, not performance, that was when I started to have a few experiences that made me realize that playing was the thing in life that I liked the most, that I cared the most about, and that nothing had ever felt like that. And that I was, that it was something that I could really care about for the rest of my life. And so that's how that all sort of happened.
Well, that's awesome. And I love your story because I was the same. I was in fifth grade. I was looking to do band when I went into junior high. And you know, you go in and you pick an instrument. And I wanted to play sax. That was what I wanted to play. And I remember same thing. And everybody wants to play sax or the drums,
right,
or, you know,
right,
the cool instrument. And so, you know, I'm sitting there and they're testing me for a bunch of stuff. And they end up going, you're going to play trombone. And so I got
the
trombone.
It's the most not saxophone instrument that you could probably that day. That felt like the furthest opposite from the saxophone.
Yeah, and for the least coordinated guy, you know, and I've got to memorize positions with this.
Right.
Yeah, I lasted all of 3 months. but you never know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love that story because you are incredibly talented, and you've been, like I said, you've been playing professionally for quite some time, and there's a lot of people out there who, you know, maybe they don't have a particular experience, and they go, well, you know, I needed to have a college education and have been worked in some industry for years for me to do this, or whatever else, and a lot of people look at people who are musicians and go, wow, this person's a child prodigy, and they played when they were, like you were saying, you know, they played piano since the time they were three. You know, but you started.
Yeah, a lot of them were just like popped out of the womb and right onto the piano bench, and that wasn't the case with me at all. I mean, I was always into it in the sense of I was always standing in front of the TV trying to copy the Temptations moves, but as far as my parents were concerned, that wasn't going to lead me to any kind of job. So that wasn't like, oh, we should definitely get him involved in da-da-da. It was just something else that I picked up. I mean, that I did in school. I wasn't really involved in a lot of activities in school per se. Like, it wasn't like, oh, that was in addition to basketball and soccer and lacrosse, but it was just another thing I was doing in school, but it just, like I say, grew into becoming something that I really cared about and something that I realized, I should say, it became the thing in a certain amount of time that I realized I could care about and I did care about and would care about for the rest of my life more than anything else.
So how long now have you been playing professionally and really making it a career?
You know, that's interesting, too, because I do know a lot of – well, actually, I'm really lucky now to be working with a few young people at the church that I play at that are really talented, and I'm glad I didn't go to high school with them because I would have been really discouraged. They're really two terrific saxophone players who are younger. And a lot of the kids that I've worked with on and off through the years, just in church or teaching lessons or whatever, really get the impression, and I understand where this comes from because it's pretty much the norm as far as thought about this stuff, that you can't make a living just playing unless you're Kenny G or Dave Koz or something. And the reality of it is that you can. And but your question was, how long have I been doing it? It's been since I turned 21 and I was able to get into the casinos at the time, mind you, that's 8 years ago, 8.5 years ago. At the time, I know. At the time,
we won't tell anyone your age.
Right. At the time, it was really possible because the casinos were rocking business-wise. And not everyone – well, Greektown had two shifts of music a day. Motor City and MGM had at least three every day. So there was constantly bands coming in and out. Since I turned 21, though, is the point that I haven't had another job. The last job I left, I was doing computer work, not so much computer work, like desktop publishing at the U of M hospital. That's the last job that I had that was not music related. And I was doing that while I started to do, well, I started to gig more than, you know, having a one gig a month or whatever. It turned into frequently, multiple times a week. And I just looked at it saying, well, at this point, this job, which is not paying me as much, is starting to get in the way of gigs that I can go do. So I just let that go. And I haven't really had the need to look back since. And so I've been lucky in that sense because a lot of people, it is hard to make work. But the thing that I try to tell the younger people that I'm working with is that if you're flexible and open-minded and willing to look at your instrument or your voice or whatever it is as not only a way to express your creativity and artistry, but also as a way to bring money in. If you can look at it that way too, in the sense of, oh, I'm only going to play these songs, or I'm only going to play jazz or whatever it is. If you look at it as a money maker as well, also you kind of say, well, I'll do weddings or I'll do playing in church or whatever it is, that you can make a living doing that. And it's pretty incredible because I didn't for sure know that going into it. I just sort of hoped. And it's been working out so far. So just keep crossing your fingers for me.
full station identification. You are listening to Anything But Ordinary Radio. We come to you every Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/ Anything But Ordinary. You can also find out more about us on our website at www.anythingbutordinary.net. And right now, we're talking with professional sax player Nick Wilczynski. If you'd like to join us in our chat room, you are welcome to ask a question, drop by. The only thing is, if you'd like to post, I see we have a number of guests in the chat room. You do have to get a free Blog Talk Radio account. It takes like 30 seconds to sign up. But then you can ask questions, and we always love questions from our listeners and those who are playing in the chat room right now. Nick, you know, what's exciting me is, like you said, you were able to jump out and take this passion you have and make it a career. So when, I'm just trying to think of, did you ever, like, have trepidation that you were going to start doing this full time? Or was it just something natural that you said, like, you mentioned that made more money than what you were doing before.
Right.
Was there any trepidation to say, you know, I'm going to go out and play sax and do it professionally? I mean, did your parents go, what are you thinking? Or your friends?
Oh, that's a great story. You hit the nail on the head there. It was this is a nice little nerve to hit on, but my parents, when I was in college and I was in my second year and I just really started to gig, I wasn't 21 yet. It was my first steady gig. It was amazing. I got it because I guess the sax player in this little combo at a restaurant in Clawson was, the sax player was unreliable. So the drummer knew me from high school. We didn't go to high school together, but we had played together. And he just called me. I was up at U of M sitting in my apartment, and he said, how soon could you get to Clawson? And I said, I don't know, 40 minutes or so. He goes, cool, because we need a sax player. Well, that turned from just one phone call into a four-night-a-week gig. So here I went from just practicing all the time in college and having the occasional gig that you were doing for free to, you know, I felt like I was in the rat pack, you know, like everyone else in school is going to do whatever they're doing, and I'm going to I was gigging more nights out of the week than not gigging. Now, of course, I was probably making 50 bucks a night, but you know, it felt really cool. I was making 50 bucks a night and tip money, so I'd go next door to the Coney Island after and eat there and just feel awesome. It was the coolest. And my parents found out that I was doing this. Now here, you know, my parents were all happy that I was at U of M studying, and I had been in the marching band for a year and all this. And, you know, I'm going the right way, following the prescribed path. And now all of a sudden I'm driving from Ann Arbor to Colossian four nights a week to play. And they were not happy about this at all. And it wasn't working out at all. They weren't happy about it. And I said, well, look, this is something I really want to do. And they were really concerned that I was going to be not paying attention to school anymore. And the thing was, at that point, once I started playing, I realized, because that's what it really was, when I first started having gigs, that I realized this was it for me. Playing was going to be it. And I said, you know, this is something I want to do, and I get the impression that it's kind of important that I start making contacts and connections now while I'm still in school, which it is, and that's good advice for a young player. And they didn't like the idea. They were really, really against it. And then I started playing at the casino, and that was like, oh, dear Lord, like, what's happened to our son now, you know? And they weren't happy about it.
Not playing in the casino, right?
Right, exactly. And the thing was, actually, this is how it got fixed in that particular case, was the keyboard player in that little group that I was working with, I talked to him because he didn't want to lose me as a sax player, but then, you know, he didn't want things to get messed up too much with my family, and so he said, just tell your parents that you'll call them every day. You'll call them every day. I'm notoriously bad at that, so the idea of me calling them every day was going to be kind of really something. And at that point, they came and took me out to dinner at school, and they had bought me a cell phone in case anything happened, and that was what happened with that. And so they kind of let me do it. They said, oh, you have to keep an eye on your grades, and if anything happens, this and this. Now, as far as was I scared about it, the only time that I was I had a regular gig back when the casinos were still going strong. This was right at the tail end of all that, and I had a regular gig that was, it was, I mean, I had some other things here and there, but it was something that I was, a group that I was working with all the time. And some things changed about the act, and I wasn't particularly fond of it, and I got really upset one night and texted the leader of the group and said, you know what, I'm done, I can't do this anymore, whatever. Well, of course, that's a bad move. You should never quit a job before you have another job. But she said, okay. I mean, it was kind of weird, you know, and ultimately, the good side of that story is that everything's okay with us now. We're friends. But the point is that at that time, I had just quit out of the blue. And I thought, oh, well, because everyone was telling me, oh, well, you know, if you quit that, you'll get another job in no time. People like you a lot, this and this. Well, everyone's there to tell you that. It's like when you're nervous about something the day before and people say, oh, you'll be fine. That's easy for them to say. But so, you know, it's a lot harder to actually live those experiences. Well, anyhow, so there I was. And this is before I started playing at church. The casino thing was starting to slow down, and I had no gig. Nothing. I mean, I had the occasional this or this, but it was nothing steady at all. I was working, you know, maybe once or twice in a week, and that's not, you know, enough to – yeah, I had a little tiny apartment and everything, but that's not, you know, that and a car payment, and you're kind of SOL on that one. So,
right.
That's when I got the most scared about it, and I got incredibly overdrawn on my bank account, and it was like, it was a frightening thing. I didn't have a credit card yet. I don't know why I hadn't gotten one, but, you know, it's like all of a sudden I was beyond broke with no idea how anything was going to change. I had just had no idea, and the rent had to be paid and everything, and, you know, ultimately it was okay. Within a few months, I got a call for what became my lasting church gig up until now, up to and including now, and everything kind of, the ship righted itself. But that was when it was the most frightening, because I always talk about how with this job you never know from week to week what's going to happen, and that's true, but it's much easier to say that than to actually live it and realize, like, oh man, I have no money coming in. It doesn't, at that point, it doesn't matter if people like you or whatever. If you have no gig, then that's
right.
A problem. But that was the worst things I've ever been. That's when I was the most scared. And after that, that's when I really started putting my own advice into action for myself, instead of just talking everyone else's ears off about it, which is to say, you know, be more flexible. Kind of, you know, learn how to work with situations and look at your horn or your voice or whatever it is, not just a tool for artistry, but also as a moneymaker, and learn how to use it to make you money when that's, because that's sometimes what it's about. When the bills come in, that's what it's about. So Yeah. Outside of that, though, I haven't been too scared about it. I just kind of went with it. And, you know, you just kind of take every week as a new adventure.
Yeah, well, you know, I love it. Two things you brought up. And the first thing is, you were still there practicing. I mean, you didn't have any gigs yet, but you were out there practicing because it was something you loved to do. And then, you know, a coincidence, all of a sudden, you see someone you knew, and all of a sudden it turned into those four gigs every week. And then the same thing, too, with, you know, you still kept with it even when times were tough. You didn't quit. You didn't give up and say, you know, I'm done with this. I'm not going to do it anymore because I'm not making money right now. You stuck with it, and you hung through it. And now you're playing a lot, and also you are playing with a pretty famous artist in Neil. Tell me, how did that come about? And what is it?
That is a crazy story.
Flying all over the place, because I see you all the time. Oh, I'm going to South Africa now, or I'm going to Japan.
Right.
You know, you're all over
the place. I can't believe it either. It, you know, it's surreal to be posting that stuff, or to be waking up on planes, you know, when I go to sleep and then wake up and you're like, wow, or like when we went to Guyana and I hadn't even heard of that country before we went there. The thing, okay, that all stemmed from a few years ago, probably going back, now this is like 5 years ago. But actually, very close to the period of time that I had just started my church gig, and I met a keyboard player who I had known of for a long time and admired, named Bam Davis, who is from Detroit, now lives in Atlanta. I was a big fan of his playing and his music. I had his CD for a long time, but I'd never had a chance to meet the guy. So one night I was playing, this was a Sunday night, I had been playing in church all day, four services. I did not feel like going to do this gig. This was like, I was dead tired, hadn't hardly slept Saturday night, you know, went right and played on Sunday, and did not want to go. I remember complaining. I was out to dinner right before I went there going like, I don't want to do this. I don't, you know, like my money was okay. I'm looking at this like, did I really have to go do this? But I had to. I couldn't cancel. So I went and did this gig, and this, again, this is where another piece of advice comes from, which is that you can never, ever, ever turn a gig down because you never know a stupid gig that you're going to be on where somebody's going to hear you. Well, so I'm playing with this band, and this guy comes in, and of course, it's to Greektown Casino, and of course, I recognize him. It's Bam Davis, this keyboard player, and I had heard of the guy and seen his picture and listened to his music a lot, had his album. Turned out he was playing at Floods across the street at that night and just decided to stop over and see who was playing at the casino. After that, he talked to me, which I was amazed. You know, he's like, oh, let me introduce myself. I'm like, you don't really have to. I know who you are and all this stuff. And it was amazing because a lot of times guys want to hear you and find you as a musician. They don't, you know, it's not like other jobs where you can submit a resume to someone or even like an audition. They don't really do work like that. Most band leaders don't. They have to find you to be interested in you. And anyhow, so the next week he had me playing with him. That was my first time playing at the African World Fest. That was my first gig with him. And ultimately what happened from there was I had done a little production that was running at the now defunct Fine Arts Theater on Woodward. That had Angie Stone in it and a girl from American Idol and a few other ringers, and I can't recall who at this point, but it was called the Soul Kitten Supper Club. It was supposed to become a tour. It didn't quite pan out. It's a great show. Out of that came doing the nationwide tour for the play called My Brother Marvin. That was the story of Marvin Gaye. And that's how I kind of got to know that whole crowd. It's a certain crowd of musicians that I had wanted to break into but didn't know how. And that all came about that way. And at that point then, I was playing with Bam on a regular basis and kind of getting with all those people, doing a little recording. And that got me playing in a situation. Kanye West was doing a show in Pontiac, and they needed a band to kind of fill in the cracks because he was really only going to be playing for like two songs, and they were just, it was like a club night, but then he was going to come in and do two songs. It was kind of an odd situation, but so they put together this hip hop band, and by some chance, Bam was playing keyboards, and the musical director, a bass player named Kern Brantley, had wanted to get another sax player. He didn't know me, and Bam said, hey, you know what, I got this guy. and he'd be good for it, and I know he'll come out and do it, da-da-da. So they gave me a chance to do that. I went and did it, so that's how Kern heard me. And then a few years passed, probably 2 years passed since all that had happened, and I heard about that they were having auditions for horn players and vocalists, background singers for Neo, and that Kern Brantley was running the auditions. And I remember thinking, like, man, I don't have a chance, because they're auditioning in L.A., Atlanta, New York, Chicago, wherever else. I'm like, and it was on a Monday. It was supposed to be in the morning. And at that point, I was doing a regular Sunday night gig every Sunday at Floods. So here I was waiting to get paid at Floods until 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and then I'm thinking, man, I got to go do this. Am I really going to go do this audition? I have no chance. There's no point, really, to me going to this. But I asked the drummer who was on the gig with me on Sunday, who had just gotten the gig like 6 months before, the Neo gig, he had just gotten that. I said, is there any point to me going to these auditions? And he said, man, you know, somebody's going to get that gig. And you might as well go and just see what happens. And I was like, man, I'm so not going to get this. But okay, I'll go. Next morning, I woke up. I was supposed to be there at, 9 o'clock in the morning. Here I was all cocky, getting ready. You know, it's like 10:30, I wake up. I make pancakes. I was supposed to have been learning this music that was, they had it in a packet on the internet to learn, like, I think it was So Sick and Go On Girl, two of the big songs of his at the time. I was supposed to be learning this. I'm playing it on my computer as I'm making pancakes. I'm like, whatever. I stand no chance in this audition. I got to the audition. Kern saw me, who was the musical director who was running the audition. He goes, Nick, I didn't know you were interested in this. And I was like, yeah, of course I'm interested. So he kind of waved me through. I didn't pay or whatever. He just sort of had me, just waved me through the admission to the thing and sent me back to the holding area. And I sat there it's funny because all the horn players, all the horn players have their instruments out. People drove in, flew in from other states. I didn't realize what a big deal this was. People are all there. They're warming up. Everybody's playing every lick they've ever heard. And I just took my horns out, set them down. I was like, I'll just wait. I have no chance to get this as it is. And waited all day because they auditioned all the singers first. I was hungry like crazy by the time it was time to go. And they said, okay, I think they probably had, let's say 6 or 7 sax players there. And I said, whatever, I'll go first. I was so unconcerned because I knew I stood no chance to get this gig. So went up, did my audition, totally just whatever about it. And what ended up happening was I got a call about a week later. The musical director was in Japan and called me. I was driving on the way to the gym and was totally not even thinking about it. I mean, I came home from the audition. I was telling people, I have no chance. There's no way I got this. And so anyways, a week later, I see this number on my phone, like 00+145, all these numbers. I'm going, what kind of, and I thought, it's like, man, when did telemarketers get cell phone numbers? I had no idea. Well, and I answered, and the guy says, hey, Nick, this is Kern. I'm calling from Japan, and are you able to go on this tour? I'm like, I couldn't believe it, And actually, the thing of it was I didn't actually believe it was real until I got on the plane to go, because it all seemed so impossible. I mean, I had done those little tours. So, like, the Marvin Gaye tour, we basically drove around the country on a glorified school bus. I mean, that was, that was on an entirely different scope. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're flying us to Orlando for rehearsals, and then from there we're going to get on tour buses and go, we were doing a 2.5-month tour. And it was really hard to believe. But it's been now almost coming up on 2.5 years now that I've been with them. And there have been some changes in the group and whatever, but somehow I managed to hold on to the gig, and I still have it. And I'd say that obviously, like, one of the coolest things about it is all the places we've gone, because those are places that no one in my family's been to. And it would be unrealistic to expect anyone to have been to these places, because it's just, I mean, it's like almost literally every corner of the earth at this point. So it's pretty wild.
We're out of time, and
yep.
I am so excited to have you as a friend, and I'm so excited for you to share, that part of your story. I'm going to have to have you on again, because There's so much more I want to ask you about what you've done, but I loved a lot of what you had to say, and it's always amazing to me and interesting how things work out, and you realize, you know, sometimes things just happen for a reason. They happen for a purpose, even if we don't understand how it works out. But, you know, I think your life, just you telling this part of your story, is a perfect example of how, you know, how that works out. You know, and it all started with, you know, a chance meeting with somebody from playing, you know, got you a gig, and, you know, the rest is history. It's amazing. So, is there any
I'm on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook is probably the best way right now. I have a MySpace page, but like most people with MySpace pages, I don't use it anymore. So it just look me up by my name. Anyone obviously who wants to check it out can see my name through your information. And that's where I have most of the time I'd be putting up where I'll be playing. And anyone can message me or whatever through there to find out anything they want to find out. And like I said, I'd love to come back anytime.
Well, Nick, thanks for joining us, and I'm excited for everything you're doing. As I said, I'm so happy to have you as a friend, and excited to see what you do next. I'm waiting for that solo album.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's actually something that is in the works. It's just been kind of been put on hold because of traveling so much. But I got to make some inroads before too long. So, yeah, I'll definitely keep you posted on that.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. We will be talking to you soon.
Great. Take care, Mike.
All right. You are just listening to Nick Wilczynski here on Anything But Ordinary Radio. Nick is a professional sax player, plays all over the country, all over the world, and also plays a lot of local gigs in Metro Detroit. If you are looking to find him, check out my Facebook page, and you can find his link to his Facebook page. And, you know, we got to get him a website and his solo CD out pretty soon, because guy is really talented, really great individual. I'm so excited to have him with us. And with that, we're way past the half hour point. I have a great friend with me now too, another professional entertainer, Lindsay Wilson. Lindsay, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Hi, I'm doing so good. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. And I wasn't going to go through the whole huge introduction, because I briefly introduced you at the top of the show. Lindsay is a professional dancer of Walt Disney World Resorts, and also a published author, a great friend, and also she is in my movie, An Anything But Ordinary Journey. And, in fact, Lindsay, everywhere I go and show this film, everybody always comments about some of your comments that are in the film. And Lindsay was just a short interview.
Why? What do they say? What do they say?
They say how wonderful you are and how you're spot on. Lindsay has a story in the film where she says, we ask the question, what is success? And Lindsay says, success is so not about the money. It's about following your passion. That's really what she says. And so many people I have talked to have said, that is so on. I've had people who have literally, you probably don't know this, but people have watched the trailer, have seen you say that it's so not about the money. I've actually had people tell me about others who've actually broken down and cried when they heard that, because they were going through something difficult, money wasn't good, and they said they just had a sense of relief because of what you said. So I'm sure you don't
realize. Oh, I love that.
That.
I'm so glad
famous.
That I said something good.
And what I love about having Lindsay on, too, like I had Nick on, two people living their passion and their purpose. Lindsay loves to dance. She also loves to write. And she went out there, wrote a book, and you're actually on your third book now, you were telling me the other night.
Yeah, I know. I was. I'm writing my third book now. It's a divorcee's dating journey. How about that?
A divorcee's dating journey. It sounds better than Sex and the City.
It almost is. It's almost like Eat, Pray, Love meets Are You There, Vodka, It's Me, Chelsea, meets He's Just Not That Into You, the female version. What do you think about that?
You know, that is fascinating. I think I need to get a copy when it comes out.
Well, thanks. I'm hoping to finish it by the end. What?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. You're hoping to finish it by.
I was going to say, I'm hoping to finish this by the end of October, and then I need a couple months to obsess over it, and then hopefully we will, my manager and I will find a Mac Daddy publisher and a publicist and an editor and an agent and all that fun stuff, and here we go.
Lindsay, one of the people in our chat room just asked you, can you repeat that, you know, what it's a combination of? Because they said, wow, have her repeat that. So I'll ask if you can repeat that again.
What I just said?
No, what the book is about, you know, this meets.
Oh, I said that it was Eat, Pray, Love meets Are You There, Vodka, Meet Chelsea meets He's Just Not That Into You, the female version.
See, so there you go. Now our listener, I'm not having to repeat it again. You had to get it the second time. Or listen to the archives after the show. You can hear what she said.
Yeah.
But you flipped.
The working title is called Shamanigans. Not Shenanigans, but
Shamanigans.
Word in there, Shamanigans, yep.
You've lived a fascinating life already. I mean, you've performed all over the world. You have been married and divorced. And you seem to enjoy being single again, too. Are an author, a published author. You've done so many things. What is, when you look back on your life so far, and it's a young life, you aren't that old. In fact, Lindsay and I are basically the same age, and I'm not going to tell anybody her
you
age.
You tell how old you are. How old are you?
I'm 35.
Me, too.
Yep.
See, it's a great place to be.
It is, and you've lived a life, I can tell you, just by the amount I know Lindsay and following Lindsay, she's lived a life that a lot of people who are 60 or 70 years old wish they could have lived in that amount of time. So what's been your, what's been for you the most exciting part of everything you've done so far in your life?
Oh, my God. Talk about an open-ended question.
Yeah.
Like my most favorite thing that I've ever done? Well, I'm going to have to narrow it down to different places that I've been. I was lucky enough to cruise the world and see the world dancing on a cruise ship. And then I got to live in Japan for over 7 months dancing for Disney Tokyo. And then 2 years ago, I went to Dubai for their international trade show and did a show there for a week. So those kinds of experiences that I get paid to do are absolutely the best because the people that I get to meet along the way change my life. You said that I had been married and divorced. Getting married was one of the best things I've ever done, and getting divorced was one of the best things I've ever done, too. And, you know, I do have a great life. I try to make it great every day, and I'm so happy with what I'm doing, dancing with Disney in Orlando. In the Beauty and the Beast show and coming home to my house that I got to keep and right on my porch. And that's right. And I hope I've answered the question as well as I can and for the short time that we have, but, you know, I have so many, I'm a storyteller. That's what I do. And I'm lucky that life has given me the opportunity to be able to tell so many stories because, like I've said before, life marinates writing. And every experience and opportunity that I get to write about and talk about and share, and that's the best part.
Yeah, I love that. That's like the best quote ever. Life marinates writing. I love that. So simple yet.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks.
Okay, that's my quote of the day tomorrow. For anybody who checks out my quote of the day on Facebook, life marinates writing. I love that.
Thanks.
And,
I have it copyrighted, but you can have it for tomorrow.
Thanks. I'm going to borrow it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem.
I want to go back to something you said, which is interesting to me, because a lot of people look at, you said getting married was one of the best things that ever happened to you, and getting divorced was one of the best things that ever happened to you. And so many people who have, at least that I've come to in my experience, there's many people who've said, you know, the same thing you have. But there's many other people that I've met that have said, you know, I wish I would have never gotten married, or it's the worst decision I ever made. Or, you know, people who've had real issues with going through a marriage, just being really upset about it, you know, when it comes to a divorce. But I like
right.
how you said that both of those things are the best things that ever happened to you. What to you, why is that, what created
why do I
that
say
philosophy
that?
For you? Yeah.
Well, I married for love and nothing else, and I was really happy. And then I wasn't, but I think that we got there together. And instead of staying in a marriage that I knew wouldn't make me happy anymore the way that it had before,
mm-hmm.
And I stayed in the marriage 2 years too long, so I worked really hard to make it work. But when I realized that I was at a point that there was nothing left, I got out, and I hate for people that stay in it. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people do stay in marriages. They have children, they have family values, you know, and that was one of the really hard things for me. Nobody's ever gotten divorced on any side of my family ever, so that's probably why I tried so hard to make it work. But also, luckily, I didn't have kids, so as I was at a place in my life where I could leave, and I don't wish divorce on anyone, not my worst enemy, because it is the worst thing that anybody should ever have to go through, and I can't believe that everybody does it on a daily basis. They don't tell you how much it hurts. It's like childbirth, you know? But I'm so glad that I got out of it, because I have had such a great life since then, and it's been hard getting, you know, my heart put back together, but I'm working on that every day, and every day it gets better, and I know that I will get married again and maybe someday have kids and just find my way back to that that happy place that I was with somebody once upon a time, because it is possible. But if it doesn't work and if it's not good, then you can't stay in it, because life is too long, like I told you the other day. Not too short, too long to not be happy.
And we're going to touch on that again in a minute, because I love that quote as well. But it really, one of the things that you're having fun not too, and I think it goes along with the book, is your shenanigans.
Haha, yeah. Yeah. How could I have written Shenanigans if I hadn't have gone through this complete heart crisis and got to experience all of these complete crazy characters that have come in my life that I have loved and hated and, you know, opened my mind to things that I never thought that I would open it to, and I'm not talking about drugs. I'm just talking about accepting people on so many different levels that I never thought that I would before, and I finally feel like I'm at the place where I can be picky and I can choose. It's kind of like trying on a black dress for me. I can choose the one that fits the best, and it's fun shopping for that, you know?
It's fun shopping. And tell me a little bit about that second quote, because I love that too. So many people say life is short, but you say life is too long, and it's too long to go through it. Not
well, I think the quote came up, life is, when you get your life taken away from you too early, that's when it's short. But when you know and believe that you're going to live a long life, it's too long. You know, I believe that I'm going to live until I'm 100 years old because I have really good genes. And so if I have most of my life left to live, then I'm going to do it the best that I can. And like I said, you know, there was only a decade of my life when I was with somebody that I'm not with anymore. And I can't wait for the other decades of my life to be with somebody else and hopefully settle down and be as happy as I once was. When I say life is long, I mean, when I say life is too long, I mean, you know, I hate it when your life is taken away from you too early, but most of us do have the privilege of living long lives, and we need to use every single day of that to make it the best that we can, and to look at our glass half full, not empty, to make the best memories that we can. And that comes from surrounding yourself with the best people that you can.
You know,
does that make any sense?
It makes total sense. And you've lived, I'll call it an unconventional life. I mean, you've been a professional dancer. You don't hear a lot about professional dancers. And you've also been you're also a published author. Tell me a little bit about taking an unconventional path. So many people, you know, the standard process is you know, go to college, get a degree in, you know, finance or whatever, and you go work for a corporation for your entire life. Well, numerous corporations usually now, and you hope to retire when you're 65 or 70 years old, and then you're going to start to enjoy your life. But you went an unconventional path. You followed your passion. Tell me about what it was about you that said you were going to take that direction and not another one.
Well, I don't think that I turned out to be what my parents wanted me to be at all. I was this wild child that was kind of handed to them that they still don't know what to do with. And one of my favorite quotes, if I can quote myself from my book, is, don't do what's right, do what's right for you. I think that the reason why people do exactly what you just said, you know, get a college degree, retire when they're 65, it's because society says that we have to do that. It's the same reason why people get married and have babies, and I've never thought that way. I've only done things because I wanted to. I actually never thought that I was the kind of person that would get married, which is why I waited until I was 28, which in this day and time is kind of late to get married. And, you know, being a dancer at 35 years old, my dad called me every day and says, what are you going to do when this is over? What are you going to do when this is over? And I'm like, what do you mean? This is not over anytime soon. I will decide that, hopefully, if I don't get injured. And I have a lot of years of dancing left in me, and I think that if you just do what makes you happy and not what society or conventional
wisdom
rules
yeah,
tell you what
really
to do, then you're going to be okay. And then you'll look back, and it doesn't matter if you are 75 and you are with the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, or if you have grandkids, if you are happy and you look back and can say, you know what, I did exactly what made me happy, and I didn't hurt anybody along the way, then you have lived the dream.
I totally agree with you, and I really like the title of your first book, and that is, You Made the Strength, You Drank It. And I really think about life in that way. You know, we make the strength that is our life. We make it however we choose to make it. I mean, we can have excuses for other people, you know, influencing it, creating circumstances in our life. Those things happen. But in the end, we're responsible for our own life, and we've got to drink it. We've got to enjoy it. And you can either create a drink that you really enjoy, that's really tasty, or you can make something that's
right.
Really not very appetizing
or
at all.
Or you can drink Jack and Coke for the rest of your life and hate it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't like Jack and Coke. Do you?
I can survive on it, but I'll generally pass on Jack and Coke.
Right. I know. And the whole, you made this drink, you drink it, that's my throw on you made this bed, you lie in it. But when
mm-hmm.
we're talking about alcoholism in the whole, you know, funny and my dysfunction, which is what my book is about, that's why I put the drink instead of bed.
Yeah, and like I said, I love it, and everything that you're doing. We've got about 5 minutes left, and you know, we have a lot of chat going on in our chat room. Everybody even in our chat room is saying how much they love you, that you are awesome.
Oh, thanks,
and,
Mike. That means so much to me. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
I'm sorry. I'm watching people talk in the chat room, and everybody's just. A lot of people have been in the same place that you have when it comes to your relationship, and so a lot of people were agreeing with a lot of what you had to say. So we've got about 5 minutes left in the show, and I want to ask you, what is next for you? Where do you see yourself going in the next, I don't know, year? Let's go with a year, because I know for you, anything longer might be too far out there to guess.
I know, right? And I don't even know what I'm going to wear tomorrow, so this is going to be hard, but I will try. in the next year, next September, I hope to have my third book published. I hope to be setting up a book tour. I hope to be reading and speaking at my book tours. If Disney wants to offer me another contract, I would do that just for the love, obviously not for the money. Disney is really good about letting me go and do what I need to do. I get lots of vacation. And, God, I don't know if I will be, you know, settled down with anybody because I'm still on that journey, which is fascinating every day. And I don't want to put that kind of limit on myself to be under pressure like that to find someone, because I'm doing just fine on my own, and I have amazing people in my life that give me everything that I need. And I love my house. I love living in Orlando. Lots more travel I have planned. Also, my screenplay that I adapted from my first book has been, my manager and I in Hollywood have been shopping that for a year now, and we have a director who's really interested, but there's three pictures in front of mine, so that's 2 years down the road. And I guess, you know, I could be upset about that, or I could say 2 years is better than no years, so I hope that we're going to be starting work on that. What?
Actually, I would agree with that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Two years is better than 2 years.
Thanks. I didn't tell you that?
I did not know that. I know that you were – I know you've been shopping it and there had been some interest, but I didn't know that, you know, it was as close as that was.
Yeah. I'm going to L.A. at the end of this month to meet with my manager and meet with some directors and agents and, you know, pitch them me. I think that I can – talk to people, and just if they can talk to me and see my passion about what I believe in, then I think that's what I can sell myself on. But I, at the same time, always say that I can write better than I speak, so wish me luck on that. Hope I don't blow it.
You won't. I mean, just be you. I mean, honestly, I'm serious. Lindsay, all you have to be is just you. Don't worry about being anything else or anything. You know, you don't have to be Hollywood. You don't have to be any, just be you, because, as I said, everybody I know that comes in contact with you just loves you to death. So as long as you just be you,
thanks, Mike.
It's very fine.
I appreciate that so much. And
well,
I will try.
Sure, I would.
I know you wouldn't say that just to both smoke up my bum.
No, you know I would tell you the truth. But,
I know.
But, you know. So don't get all neurotic about it, all right?
Are you kidding?
When you go.
The day that I get a big head, I'll let you know. I don't know what that would ever be like.
Well, Lindsay, I so love you being with us. And 1 minute left. Please let our listeners know where they can find you, find your book, et cetera.
Okay. You can go to my website, which is www.youmadethisdrink.com. You can buy my book on 25,000 websites, including barnesandnoble.com and amazon.com. The title of the book is You Made This Drink, You Drink It. My name is Lindsay Moss. And if you want to Google me, or you can write to me from my website, I would love to hear your feedback. And, of course, I will get back to you immediately. I love hearing from all of my readers. I work at Disney. I'm in Beauty and the Beast at Hollywood Studios. Probably shouldn't have given that information out, but there it is.
Well, what solid characters you play, but you're there.
Yeah, I'm there, and you can come and see me doing that anytime. And I have made so many friends through my readers, and I'm so glad that I can reach out to them and that they can understand and accept and relate to my story. And so that's it. Thank you so much for being my friend and having me on your fabulous station.
Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us, and we will do this again. Everybody knows I've had Lindsay on before, and I will definitely have you on again because it's always – so much fun. Lindsay, thanks for dropping in tonight.
You've got it, Mike. Thank you so much for having me, and I will talk to you very soon, my friend.
Oh, we definitely will. That was Lindsay Wilson. I'm so happy to have her on. Such a great friend. And you can also find her book at www.youmadethisdrink.com under the name Lindsay Moss. And really quickly, I just want to thank all of you for being on the show tonight. We have a great show next week. Entrepreneur extraordinaire Kevin Nations is going to be with us. He's going to show everyone how to make a lot of money with a real easy plan. And he's been highly recommended to me by a number of friends, and I highly suggest you stop by tomorrow. I mean, not tomorrow, next week, next Tuesday. Every Tuesday night, I keep getting this mixed up with our old Wednesday times, but every Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Please join us on Anything But Ordinary Radio. We'll see you all next week. Love you all. We'll talk to you soon. Go out and be extraordinary.